21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Hi, this is Raymond Zarek of The Doors, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
All things are one, all songs are sung, all days are done with sunset. But you know that, don't you? So let's get down to what's your name and what have you to teach me? What do you try to reach me now?
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. By the way, you're listening to a dear friend of mine, Bob Grimm, from the Akasha album. He was one of the best meditator and musicians I ever worked with. Now, I've heard it frequently said that I better tell you who I am. This is 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Our executive producer is Laura Courtney. Our engineer is Kristen Hegerick. Now, I really have heard it frequently said that music is the soundtrack of our lives, but I prefer Jimi Hendrix's perspective that music is magic. By the way, Jimi Hendrix's sister is rejoining us next hour to discuss magic in Jimi's music. Having lived in Baltimore most of my life, I found our fair city had a great deal of magical music played at, a great many different magical places and many venues by the hundreds, as a matter of fact, hundreds of bands, scores of venues, and my dear friend and Uncle Steve Boone, bass player for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Lovin' Spoonful, has been widely quoted as saying, "Baltimore is a gold mine of exceptional musical talent." Now, this hour, author musician Joe Vaccarino is rejoining us to review the second edition of Baltimore Sounds, a new and much expanded edition of 642 pages. The original 2004 edition numbered a mere 352 pages, if you call that a mere. So who is Joe Vaccarino? Well, over the years, Joe played bass guitar in teen groups, worked as a roadie for local club bands, and hired bands to perform at the Vaccarino's family-owned restaurant. As a record collector since his preteens, Joe grew up in the 60s and 70s rock. His ever-expanding musical interests branched out into various musical styles, including soul, rhythm and blues, doo-wop, even some jazz, country, folk, and bluegrass. Now, throughout all the years of collecting, he was always intrigued to find records by local artists. More recently, Joe began a quest to learn more about local artists and their recordings. His research uncovered much more of a local musical heritage than he ever imagined. In 2004, Joe published his first book, Baltimore Sounds, an illustrated encyclopedia of Baltimore area pop musicians, bands, and recordings, 1950 to 1980. The book was intended to be a living history and tribute to the rich and varied musical talents of the Baltimore regional area. Included are biographies of local bands and individual musicians, regardless of whether they released records or not. As it is an impossible task, to document every single musician in Baltimore. As a result, there were omissions, none intentional, and many folks contacted Joe to add information and provide updates or correction. Eventually, it was decided to incorporate all that new information into this vastly expanded Baltimore Sounds. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Joe.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
I'm about an A-minus right now, and I hope by the end of this hour I'll be an A.
Can I say you're under arrest?
Uh-oh, again? Yes, I guess I got the wrong shoes on, so that's worthy of being under arrest. Back during the W administration, you could be arrested for just about anything, for not combing your hair, for not wearing a tie, and stuff like that. Well, what has been the response to your first edition of Baltimore Sounds, Joe?
The first edition was very well received. I got a lot of nice comments, mostly positive. There was naturally a few people who were a little disappointed that they weren't included. But like you said, there were no intentional omissions.
No, there certainly wouldn't have been. Now, when did you begin to feel a second edition of Baltimore Sounds was needed?
Well, it seemed like for quite some time I was kind of running dry. The well was running dry on finding new information. So I finally decided it was time to publish. And as those things go, as soon as the book came out, I started getting feedback and people contacted me and coming out of the woodwork, so to speak, with additions and corrections and all kinds of new stuff.
Well, concerning the second enlarged edition, which is just 642 pages, I greatly enjoyed its front and back covers. Describe them for us, will you please?
The front cover was sort of an idea I had, and I met this guy. His name is Joe Moscati, and he worked for TBC, which is an advertising firm down in Fells Point. I don't know if I should say that without. I guess you have to get advertising dollars from them. But he thought it was a great project, and he offered his services to on the side to design something for me. So him and a couple of his buddies from work came up with this guitar amplifier, sort of in the style of a Fender amp with the same type of lettering. And it wraps around to the back to where you see the back of the amplifier.
That was very clever, especially the little crushed can of... I think it could be a national bow.
It could be.
Is it? Is it?
It could be,
but can't tell, really. That's fantastic, because that's exactly where the old cans used to be stuffed. I remember that.
That's what I thought. It would be a great idea to have the wire stashed in there. And, I mean, that was all kinds of... Back in the day when we were removing equipment, there was always stuff stashed in there.
Boy, that was the terrible part, in my opinion, of... Because I used to help people every now and then doing that, moving that equipment. It's a lot heavier than people thought. Also, what is even, in my opinion, just as nice is the inside of the front cover and the back covers. Am I correct to think that the front cover inside are the various labels of these Baltimore bands recorded on the inside? And on the inside of the back cover are the covers of those albums of the Baltimore bands?
Well, what I wanted to do with this new book is preserve... the second book is a greatly expanded of the first edition with much more information, much more in-depth information. And it also, in addition to that, it goes into the 80s and 90s. So essentially, the entire span is from 1950 to 2000 now. So with that... The inside of the front cover was the back cover of the original book.
Oh.
I wanted to keep that.
Yeah.
And it was a collage that I made of as many local labels, 45 record labels that I could find. So I cut them out and arranged them all in a collage-type format here.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It really is. And the fact is that this is historic. I mean, these are real. It's not just something made up. It's also, you know, on the inside of the back cover, those are the covers of the music, the CDs or albums that the Baltimore Sounds had.
Right. Since the front cover was part of the old book and it had the record labels up to 1980, I used the back cover to show the later years. Mm-hmm. And the later years, you know, our primary format is CD. So I made a collage of some of my favorite CDs, music-wise, and some of the more important CDs from the last 20 years on the inside of the back cover.
Well, that's just lovely. It really is lovely. It's beautiful, and it's informative. And the thing I like about it most of all, it is useful if you're into history of anything. How is the 2012 edition different from the 2004 edition? You mentioned a little bit about that, but would you like to go into that some more?
Well, like I say, I was made aware of a lot of information that was missing in the first edition, and I also added 20 more years worth of music.
20 more music, okay. Well, then there's some advertisers in here. Bill's Music Store. Would you like to say a few words about it? Because it's just legendary, Bill's. store?
Bill's has been around since 1965, as it says right here in the ad. and he, I remember going to Bill's when I was young and up and coming, buying equipment, and they've gone to several different locations and have their current location that is still thriving.
Mm-hmm.
Bill was very interested in the project and graciously offered to purchase some advertising to help me with defray the cost of printing.
Well, I remember when my dear friend Stuart Zolotaro, you probably know him, is one of Baltimore's great photographers, has photographed just about every major rock and roller that ever existed. When I wanted to find a replica of Sir Paul McCartney's guitar, that's where we went, to Bill's Music Store. And it took a while to get it, but it was really worth getting it. How did you go about collecting all this new information on these bands? Was it just that people kept now started calling you and saying, hey, you forgot me, and here's new stuff?
That was a lot of it, yes. And I did a lot of internet searches. I spent a lot of time in the library beating the pavement, going out to clubs and talking to people, bands. I would always go out and try to catch some of the veteran players in bands who had long history of playing throughout the area. And it just snowballed from there.
Well, truly, this is another labor of love. The Baltimore Business Journal, said that it's the most comprehensive book ever written about Baltimore's music scene. And author Rafael Alvarez, is he still in Baltimore?
Ralph is back in Baltimore, yes. He's a childhood friend of mine, and he graciously wrote a blurb for the back cover.
And he said, this is history you can use, and it's Crabtown through and through. You know, Ralph did a lot of important articles for the Sun Papers, especially on music some years ago. I don't know if he's still employed by the Sun. I don't know if anybody's employed by the Sun Papers anymore. Well, I better shut up on that one. Now, how do you feel about those kind of critiques?
Ralph did a beautiful coffee table book about the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and in addition to some other novels that he wrote. And I was really grateful that he wrote something for me.
Yeah. I know that Steve Boone has a very high opinion of Ralph. Well, I think we need to take a break here. Is that true, Courtner? Dr. Courtner? Yes, it is indeed. Hey, by the way, going into in this particular break and now the break, all the music is Baltimore music. And I'll try to name the bands and those singing as we go along. Right now, as a matter of fact, we're going to hear some music by a dear friend of ours, Tom Chalkley, By the Reason. By the Reason.
Sometimes this evil thought gets into my mind. Everyone I love.
Hi, this is Steve Boone, bass player of the Class of 2000 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, The Lovin' Spoonful, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest Joe Vaccarino, Baltimore Sounds, Second Edition, an illustrated encyclopedia of Baltimore area pop musicians, bands, and recordings, 1950 to 2000, MJAM Press. Go to BaltimoreSounds.com. Hey, you were just listening there to, some of my favorite people. That's the Lotus Band, Gary Brown and Louise. That's Sea and Sun. As a matter of fact, as I said earlier, all the bumpers in this hour are from local Baltimore bands featured in Joe Vaccarino's book, Baltimore Sounds. All right. What I also admire about your work is that you've included all fields of music, rock and roll, jazz, folk, country, etc. Let's talk about some of those groups and individuals. Tell us a little bit about Larry Adler, whose career began in the 1930s and continued into 2001.
Larry Adler, he's one of those guys. Well, he's very early on, one of the many people who left Baltimore to find their fame and fortune. Attended Peabody, and he was very he played with a lot of different major artists. And whether there was any truth to it or not, he was a victim of the McCarthy era accusations due to his political views. I don't know if that affected his music, but I think he was not allowed to return back to the United States for quite a period of time.
That must have been terrible, really. Hey, by the way, is it true he was a guest artist with Sting, as well as, Elvis Costello, Elton John, Kate Bush, Meatloaf, and others? That's really extraordinary.
Yes, it is. Very well regarded harmonica player.
Well, on page 48, we find Uncle Steve Boone and Aunt Trudy Morgel, who are both still performing. Tell us a little bit about them and their music, because they're throughout this particular work.
You had mentioned Steve, and he does a little promo for you, too. Steve, as you know, was a member of the Lover and Spoonful. He had relocated to the Virgin Islands, and I guess on one of the trips out to the Virgin Islands, Trudy had met up with him, mm-hmm. and they became friends. And then on one of their trips back into the States, she brought him through Baltimore, and he was quite astounded by the quality musicianship here.
Yeah.
And eventually opened up a recording studio. He ran Blue Seas Recordings on the barge in the Inner Harbor.
Yeah, what a place that was. You went down there, didn't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I designed their logo. Anyway, I'm going to send you a copy of their logo so you have it.
Okay.
All right. Then mention Scott Johnson. Scott Johnson, he's been very close to Steve, Trudy, and a whole bunch of other musicians. What did Scott Johnson contribute to in regards to his talents? What's he do now?
Scott came here via, he was from the D.C. area. I'm not exactly sure. And he came here and he played in a group called Both Worlds. Then he went on and he played, he was a leader of the Johnson Brothers and a couple other bands. Scott went back to school and became an attorney, and he's one of the top entertainment attorneys in Baltimore and probably nationally.
He sure is. I've had to use him. He's a pretty expensive attorney. I mean, but I've had to use him when I had to deal with the Beatles, and he did an ace of a job. They didn't want the Yellow Submarine book to come out, and he made sure it did, and I was really happy about that, obviously.
Scott, when I went and talked to him about my project initially, because Greg Terrace over at Starley introduced me to Scott, because he was just blown away when he first saw my transcript. Mm-hmm. And I went to Scott, and I went in there with a bunch of typed pages and a book full of photos, and he just latched right onto it, and yeah. He said, "You know, is anybody you need to talk to?" And I said, "Well, this person I'm having trouble to contact, and I don't know how to contact this person." And the next day, these people were calling me.
Yeah,
Scott was really great, very helpful.
Brilliant man, a brilliant hard worker. Well, one of Baltimore's premier rock groups was Coyote, 1971 to 76. What did Coyote contribute to the music scene, and where did they play?
Coyote, they were a rock band that came out of Bob Brady's Concords.
Oh.
And they released several records, or at least a single and an album. Very hard to find an album these days, that was engineered by George Massenberg.
Oh, my.
He was another major player in the Baltimore scene that went on to fame and fortune, producing people like Linda Ronstadt and others out in California. There was members of Coyote that went on to play with Dion with his Streetheart band. Mm-hmm. He did his Return of the Wanderer reunion.
But there's another band that was I used to get them mixed up with Coyote. It was called Crack the Sky. from 1974 to 2000s, Rolling Stone magazine declared that their first album, Crack the Sky, was album of the year. I don't know what year that was. Well, who was this, were in this particular group, and where did they play?
Now, Crack the Sky, when they first came out, and I've been always being a record collector, when they first came out, I had a friend at the Harmony Hut record store was their buyer, and he would turn me on to all the new releases. And Crack the Sky came out, and I loved it. I was a big fan of Crack the Sky right from their first album. But they weren't from Baltimore. They were from the Ohio Valley out near Pittsburgh or so. And I guess the Baltimore radio stations kind of adopted them, and they migrated this way. And they went through several albums. Then I guess around the late 70s, early 80s, I'm not exactly sure the year time span, when they had member changes, they were replaced by Baltimore players. Yeah. And it eventually evolved to, it was all Baltimore guys in that band. Except, I mean, John Palumbo was always a leader, but it was mostly Baltimore guys, Kerry Ziegler and Bobby Hurd, and I can't remember all the names, but they kind of migrated to Baltimore and were very well received here.
They sure were. Now, when I was reading about the Delmonicos, a group called the Delmonicos, that was 1962 to 65. I saw they played at the Blackjack in 1967. Now, I painted a mural on the front of a Blackjack nightclub located at 10 East Lafayette Avenue, which almost cost me my life because the rednecks did not want to see this mural put up there. It was really tough. Baltimore was really tough back there in the late 60s. I mean, it was a difficult place to be sometimes. Was the Blackjack nightclub that the Delmonicos played at one and the same?
The Blackjack and the Scene. Yeah. I guess at some point they changed names, and I really don't know the history behind that. But it was primarily a black club.
Mm-hmm.
The Delmonicos, in fact, well, they were a white group with a black singer.
Huh.
Towson area. It was, and a soul group. And members of that group went on to a lot of, members of that group played in the Lafayettes and the Majestics, Bob Brady's Concords.
That's interesting because that was located on 10 East Lafayette Avenue. All right, there's a lot of interesting little coincidences here that may mean nothing, but I am always fascinated by things like that. When I painted this mural, I was obviously allowed to eat and dance and have a good time at that particular place. But boy, Sir Walter Jackson, Ike and Tina Turner, I mean, they had some of the biggest names for that particular town. This particular town that I ever saw come to Baltimore. Now, let's change into the Lotus Duo of Gary Brown and Louise Morgan. We heard a little bit of their music a little earlier. They, too, evolved and are still playing, but not necessarily together. What kind of music did they play? Where could they be heard or could have been heard?
Well, I'm thinking they were kind of like an artsy folk pop sound. Gary's a friend of mine we go back to the early 80s. Gary played guitar, and he also played saxophone, and Louise played flute and is a vocalist. And they were a one-time husband and wife. I'm not remembering exactly what clubs they played at, but the group later became the Lotus Band. The Lotus Band. They went from a duo to a band, and it featured a guitarist named Michael Hedges,
mm-hmm.
who was also a Peabody student.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Hedges went on to, he did a lot of albums for Wyndham Hill, and he was guitar player of the year for a number of years.
Well, then there is Ronnie Dove. Boy, Ronnie Dove, 1957 into the 2000s, who began with the Belltones. What did Ronnie Dove accomplish over those decades, and where did I think he played just about everywhere.
Yeah, Ronnie is another one that came to Baltimore. He was originally from Herndon, Virginia, and he was with the Coast Guard. But it's kind of an interesting story about how he got his first gig, and they put together the Belltones, and then they put a rockabilly record out, which is a very rare record these days, called Loverboy. And then things just kind of progressed from there. He did some stuff with Jack Gale, a couple of records.
Oh, I like Jack Gale.
He did some stuff on the Decca record label. And then he went to Nashville to strike out on his own. And through those years, I think he was, you know, if you ask me who were the most successful or popular musicians in Baltimore, he would have to be right in the top. It's hard for me to think up names without fear of missing somebody, but he would be right up there. And he put out a string of top 40 hits that was pretty amazing, considering the years that he was competing with the British Invasion and Motown and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Then there was Ethel Ennis. Now, she, wow, 1947 to the 2000s, I guess she's still singing because of that was her life, whose husband was Earl Arnett. And we worked together on a number of stories for the Sun Papers. And I designed Ethel Ennis's logo for the Ethel's club called Ethel's, which used to be right across the street from the Meyerhof. It's another, I've forgotten what it is today, but it's still a place to eat, I think, and a place to jazz. I think it's still jazz. Is that correct?
As far as I know, yeah. Ethel actually put out a biography, a book, The Reluctant Jazz Star, in 1984, and it's really good reading. And her and Earl had gone over what I had, information I had gathered, and they sent me a copy of her book, but they wrote up a nice biography for her, you know, for me to include in the book. And, you know, she did a lot of major label stuff.
She sure did.
Went from playing the clubs on Pennsylvania Avenue to playing the World's Fair with Benny Goodman. And
did a lot of traveling. I mean, she went into Europe Fair for a while, didn't she? Just extraordinary. Hey, by the way, what fascinated me as I was going through this book, how did you find out that I was a singer? Because you listed me with one folk group. I did. I was with a number of folk groups. And this is just amazing. Here I am sitting here reading, and all of a sudden I said, hey, that's me. It's really, really strange because I'm not known in Baltimore at all in regards to that. But that's how I got into all other kinds of musical things. How did you find this out?
I think we had touched on that one time when we had met up, and I don't remember exactly where that information came from. But I think you had alluded to it at one time.
Yeah, We, as a matter of fact, I was with Skip Brooks, and at one time we were a trio called the, Cambridge Trio. Yeah, we were at a Cambridge Trio. Then we turned into back in the mid-60s, we turned into a five-part group with Skip Brooks. Skip Brooks traveled the planet. He just traveled. He's been on our show a few times. Did amazing banjo work, just amazing. Great singer and that kind of thing. Well, I was really, thank you for putting me in there.
You're welcome.
That was wonderful.
You had alluded to that, and as usual, you know, I started asking questions. I think you were kind of modest about it, so I don't know if you wanted to tell me the whole story. You know?
Well, the thing is it caused me a lot of difficulty because when I used to, we used to sing at different colleges and universities, and when we did sing at Towson State College, it got me in a lot of trouble. The jocks, music, did not like folk music.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not like their girlfriends eyeing the folk musicians standing up on stage to the point where they were going to break every bone in my body. I've had some strange experience.
So you got the rednecks after you. And you got
That's right, jocks and the rednecks. Okay, I better get Hey, then you introduced me to traditional bluegrass, Kathy Fink, 1970s to 2000s, who I learned was world-renowned. Tell us a little bit about Kathy Fink, how successful she was and where she was heard.
Well, it's all in the book. she's a banjo player, songwriter, and a very accomplished bluegrass musician. She also did children's music. She had a duo with Marcy Marxer, and both of them were members of an all-girl bluegrass group called Blue Rose.
Yeah.
They did a lot of releases on Rounder Records, Sugar Hill, Flying Fish labels.
She recorded from 75 to 2005. You know, I need to relate this to our listeners, and that is this. Friends, this is a 600-some page book. I don't know how many hundreds of groups are in here. It's really wrong of me to expect any author to remember all this stuff. And I'm just amazed that you're able to spout off like this, because it's just amazing how your memory must be incredible, is all I can say. So let's go to another. Here's Flo. Flo, 1970 to 1973. I have a selfish reason for talking about Flo. I know, yes, of course, they were linked to Steve Boone and everybody. There were so many groups, from Trudy to everybody. They went through, I think, maybe 9 or 10 different groups, all in Baltimore. But I wanted to know the name of the long-haired musician sitting in the center of this photo. I bumped into him repeatedly, because my favorite song in the world at that time was Eric Clapton's Politician Man. The way this fella did it was just extraordinary. And we'd bump into each other, and he'd say hello to me, and I'd say hello to him, and then I'd forget his name. But I've always wanted to talk to him again. And you have the names there. I don't know if it was Davis or Shacohis, that is Shacohis, or a person by the name of Towers. Now, I know the other people in there, because one was, I think, is Trudy, and the other is Walt Bailey or something like that.
Yeah, Walt Bailey. I'm looking at this picture on page 163, and Sam Towers sent that to me. Sam is...
So it can't be Towers.
No, well, I think it's the guy there is Bungalow Bill. They called him Bungalow Bill Davis.
And that's you mean this guy in the center?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I'll be. Did you ever see his teeth?
No.
They were almost like metal, and that was fascinating. He had braces on that I've never seen before. I don't know if he had a double row set of teeth, but his singing was just fantastic. Whoop, break time here on 21st Century Radio and again, all our bumpers that we're playing tonight are Baltimore bands, and all of those bands are in this book, Joe Vaccarino's second edition, Baltimore Sound, over 600 pages. You must have 500 illustrations. No, more than that. You got more than that, don't you? Because even if you had one illustration on a page, you'd have 640 some. But anyway, it's got a lot of illustrations. And we'll be back in just a few minutes. And let's see who we're going to hear out now. All right, let's think. This is Walking Blues. Walking Blues. Max up.
I feel like blowing my old lonesome horn.
Hi, this is Roseanne Cash, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
I have very seldom enjoyed an interview this much.
Oh, really?
Very seldom.
Well, ditto.
All around the world, every boy and every girl, they take a lesson from me. Doing the stupidity.
Oh, boy, you know, I'm sorry about Max Oakes and Howdy Doody. That was Walking Blues just before we took our break there. I get so excited about this stuff because, you know, when you know these people, it's pretty exciting. And you're listening now to a group I actually sang with a couple of times, the Van Dykes. You're listening to Stupidity. I had a great time with those guys. I took advantage of the fact that I was Baltimore City College's person who got all the singing groups and brought them in. And so I took advantage of them, and they didn't mind. Most of the other people were laying on the floor, though. I'll tell you that. You know, City College is a hard hard place. Our guest, of course, is Joe Vaccarino, Baltimore Sound, second edition, an illustrated encyclopedia of Baltimore area pop musicians, bands, recordings, 1950 to 2000, MJAM Press. Go to BaltimoreSounds.com. Hey, you remember the Van Dykes?
They were a little bit before my time.
Oh, well... yeah, that's right. I'm about 94 years old, so. But I just love that song. I mean, they. Well, anyway, we better get back onto this before we run out of time. Oh, gosh, there's so many other things here. Billie Holiday, everyone's heard of her. Well, she's legendary and everything, and that's 1930s. But then, listen to this. This is one of the reasons why I like this book so much. Jan and her Rock A Jets was one of the few all-girl rock bands. How successful were they, and where did they play?
The Rocket Jets, Jan and the Rocket Jets. They played, they had an interesting history, but they played, you got me on that one. I'm trying to remember.
Let's say that, I'll try to look that up. You just tell us about them.
Well, Jan was, there was an all-girl group. They played,
Furnished Branch Road. That's down there in Pasadena, right?
And the Pepper Hill Lounge.
Pepper Hill Lounge, wow. Yeah, and places like I never heard of, like Sadie's, The Dead End, Helen's Hollywood Disco, Blanche's. Now, Blanche's I heard before. There was a group at one time called Blanche's, too, wasn't there?
A lot of places that are long gone.
Yeah, they're almost all gone, aren't they? Geez, a whiz. I mean, you know, Hollywood Park, Latin Casino, et cetera. I'm sorry. They all seem to burn down somehow, but we won't comment on that.
Yeah, from what I hear, the Jan and the Rocket Jets were very, very accomplished and could have gone on to great, great things. They were kind of right on the verge, but just never got out of the local club. The local club scene. I don't think they released any records or anything.
Well, they must have been a real fun group. Okay, now, Light. Now, we've talked about Light and in the past and Woodstock because those members went up in a bus I painted with Bob Grimm. You have printed photos of the Woodstock bus front and side views. Did you know it was a model of that bus was created by China, in China?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's why I'm not telling you anything new then. Okay. Well, as a matter of fact, that bus also got me in lots of trouble, needless to say. Painted buses in Baltimore in the mid-60s, late-60s were not welcome. I mean, they might have been cute, but to the people who drove them, a lot of people were angry at that.
I was told that the group name, Light, came from your artwork.
That's
on
right.
On the bus.
Yeah. Yeah,
which was Bob Grimm's bus.
Yep, it was Bob Grimm's bus, and I had my tickets. I was going to go up. I contacted some of Hendrix's people because that's who I was close to at that time, and I said, "How many people do you think are going to be there?" And he said, 50,000. And I said, "That's too much. That's too much. I'm never going to go to." Because I wanted to see Jimmy, you know. I mean, I wanted to see my friend. I would have never seen him. I mean, I never would have. There's no way to get near him, and that kind of a thing. That's the reason why I didn't want to go. And
so Light kind of evolved from the Progressions.
Yeah.
And the group had Ricky Peters and Trudy Cooper and Walt Bailey, Bob Grimm, and there's some famous pictures of Bob and Trudy sitting on top of the bus at Woodstock.
That's right. Rolling Stone has made that. Well, Associated Press and Life magazine Rolling Stone, really. I mean, it's been in Rolling Stone a number of times. That really was incredible. I wish we still had parts of that bus, but we don't. The paint held it together, Joe.
I've been asked if I ever knew what happened to that bus. I don't know.
Well, we can hardly remember because after we put the fourth or fifth engine in it, and after, as I said, we painted, I used Rust-Oleum. Remember Rust-Oleum paint? Well, it literally held buses together. It only had 39 horsepower, as you know, Joe. So it really wasn't the kind of bus to carry all that equipment, and that's the reason why it got to be too much.
Well, it should be in the Smithsonian right next to Ken Kesey's bus.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So we'll do another one someday. Now, I was so very surprised by the Mighty Invaders. Now, this was a group 1985, 86. I did their portraits, and it's in the Lexington Market. Could you tell us a little bit about their music? This group I enjoyed a great deal, but there's really not much to know about them, unfortunately.
That is one I was not able to find much about.
No.
And there's a handful of them in the book that I'm not able to find information about. And I did have a record that they released in 1981, a single, and it was a reggae group.
Yeah.
And a picture came with the record, and that's pretty much all I have.
Well, that's enough, because for most people had no idea that they were so good. They really were. It's just too bad I didn't know the Marley family by then. I would have loved to have introduced them to them. But on page 319, I found a photo of the Baltimore Light Giants. What's it doing in there? It's a poster of the Baltimore Light Giants, which I'm biased about because we work with them.
Well, you know, at the end of the chapters, and I call each letter the alphabet a chapter, there was some space, and I just kind of filled it up with stuff that I thought was of interest that I came across while I was doing my research. And one page, with me being a record collector, I put pictures of sports-related memorabilia. And there's a whole bunch of sports-related 45s. I just put that ad up there because it was part of my sports page.
Well, thank you for doing that, because a lot of people now know about the Baltimore Light Giants, and the more they're mentioned, the better, because these guys were one hell of a ball player, all of them, and to have done what Major League Baseball did to them for so many decades was, in a certain sense, I think it was unforgivable. A lot of people are forgiving them, though, but I'm biased. Now, there are the progressions, which we talked a little bit about. Then the group called Touch, which was tied into the progressions and flow and all the other guys. But Urch Perch, 1968 to 1973. And this, again, was one of those Baltimore groups I worked with using meditation techniques at that time. Who were some of their members, and where did they play?
Well, Urch Perch, I think, was one of the bluesette bands, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Now, they went to California with Nils Lofgren and his group, and as it turns out, Nils Lofgren got the recording contract. They were pretty well known throughout mostly the underground rock scene here in Baltimore.
Now, they were very similar in a certain way, other ways, to Uncertain Things. Mm-hmm. That's 1966 to 1969. And again, so that's another group that I worked in. Most of these groups at that time were interested in meditation, and we had some shortcut ways so that we could meditate quickly just before they went on stage. And sometimes it helped a lot, and other times they didn't do as well. They became a bit more spiritual and felt like the music was just too rough. You know, I can understand with that.
I've heard some recordings that they did, which were pretty good.
Yeah.
I think they were one of those groups that was kind of, the promise was there. You know, they were right on the verge, but they just, somehow, some reason, just didn't make it. It's kind of sad because, you know, everybody thinks, you know, there's such great talent involved, but there was never any kind of an infrastructure here in Baltimore for getting our artists known.
Yeah. That's true. And that's what Steve Boone kept saying, and that's why he wanted the barge. They call it the barge at that one time, because, as you know, as you mentioned, it was out there in Shawan Road, out there in Hunt Valley. And then they moved it down to the Inner Harbor, and as you tell the story of how it sunk on Christmas Eve, and of course Steve lost a lot of his guitars and equipment. That certainly was not very pleasant on Christmas Eve.
Urch Perch, their drummer, Ken Wally, has been instrumental in organizing some of the Blues reunions.
Yes, he has. I really enjoyed them, and especially Ken. These people are really very dedicated. As a matter of fact, Gosh, I've forgotten her name. I'm sorry, but there was a DVD done on the blue set thing, which, gosh.
That was Sharon Payton.
Thank you.
Was the wife of Art Payton,
yeah.
Who owned the, well, I guess they owned the blue set club.
Now, what were some of the more, some of the most important venues in Baltimore, but which don't exist anymore, or that most of these people played?
I don't know, places like the Rhapsody Club.
Where was that?
Rhapsody was towards, it was on Baltimore-Annapolis Boulevard, down towards Glen Burnie.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
There was the Hollywood Park. Over in Essex, the Club Venus.
Club Venus. Boy, they had some big acts there at times, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. The Full Moon Saloon.
That still exists, doesn't it? Full Moon Saloon down in Fells Point?
Is that still there?
I believe so, because that's where Trudy and some of the Trudy.
I've seen Trudy and Walt in the,
yeah.
In the horse.
Yeah. Oh.
Where she came in on.
Yeah, but they also played at the.
The Full Moon.
Yeah, the Full Moon. It's a small place, but I enjoyed being there. The we had some recording studios. That some of these Baltimore groups play, recorded their music at. I remember Flight 3.
Flight 3.
And
of course, there was Blue Seas, we've already talked about, and ITI, which preceded that.
Yeah, yeah. What did ITI stand for? Intelligent? No, I don't know. I don't know, but I've always wondered what that was. Then there were even some WCBM. This WCBM played a part in your book, and we had some DJs from Baltimore.
There's a section about radio stations and air personalities in Baltimore in the back of the book. Looking at the list there, I mean, some of the ones that just jump out at me: Lee Case. Joe Knight.
Yeah, Joe Knight was he.
Paul Rogers and Frank Luber were there. Ken Merson.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny, there were a bunch of people there over the years.
Johnny Cantino. I don't ever think I ever remembered him. Oops, we're about out of time. What I'm going to do now is relate to you our outgoing song is Buena Vista by the band Light. And again, I want to thank Joe Vaccarino, Baltimore Sound, second edition and illustrated encyclopedia of Baltimore area pop musicians, bands, and recording. This would make a terrific Christmas present. It really would. MJAM Press, BaltimoreSounds.com. Joe Vaccarino. Thank you, Brother Joe.
Thank you, Dr. Bob. It was an honor to be on the show. Maybe I'll see you at the next Blues at Reunion or at Artscape with your art car.
If either of those things happen again, I'll be there and I'll see you. And here they come.
On Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore, and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lisa Lucero.